We're limited on time, so let's go ahead and actually get started. So welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming to this session here. I hope you guys had a good lunch, that you're all ready to go to learn a lot of stuff. We're expecting a lot of people throughout this session, so please grab a seat, mill to the front if you want to. We don't bite. But it should be a really fun session. We got a lot to cover. We're going to speak a little bit fast, so we apologize, but don't forget, all of this is recorded. Our slide deck is currently available, so hopefully you'll be able to get enough information that when you go home, you'll be able to remember what we talked about.
All right. So in 2007, something big happened to the technology industry. Who can tell me what that is? Guess? Any guess? What is it?
Someone said it, right? Who said that?
Lucky gentleman. That is correct. In 2007, the first generation of iPhone was released. In just a few short years, we're really seeing a huge shift in the way people are creating and consuming content over the internet. One fundamental shift has been the great migration from the dominance of desktop computers to your mobile device. Users now have high expectations of websites and the content to be personalized, highly available on any device, on any form factor. And as a result, this also changed the way people are doing web design and web development. The immense popularity of iPhone and iPad started the tipping point for many organizations in recognizing the importance of creating user experience targeted for their mobile devices. Now, some organizations created native apps to complement their websites, and some organizations started creating separate sites for separate devices. Now, we all know, as the number of mobile devices increases, the possibility of doing that is impossible. We need a better way. And responsive web design is here to help us with that. It allows us to create one solution for one website that provides user experience tailored to different devices without the need to create separate solutions for each device.
So this is a 300-level session. Rita and I haven't seen too many 300-level responsive design sessions on responsive design with 2013. We wanted to really be able to show you a lot of the code. So although we're going to go over some of the baseline in the beginning, we're going to talk about what responsive is, so those of you who don't know will at least get caught up. But then we're diving into code. We've got a lot of demos. Our last two demos are intense. Our last demo in particular, where we actually move everything into SharePoint, it's long, it's got a lot of information. We're going to speak really fast because we really want to get this information to you. The video, though, that we're going to be using is on YouTube, or will be on YouTube, and we'll put it on Yammer so that you can rewatch it. So let's go ahead and get started because we're only got so much time. So first of all, I wanted to make sure you know who we are. To my left is Rita Zhang. She was formerly with Microsoft Consulting Services. She now is with GE. She's a software architect. She was the founder and architect of SPMe, which was the precursor to the Newsfeed app for the iPhone. And she also co-authored a book with me, Pro SharePoint 2013 Branding and Responsive Web Development, available on Amazon, with A Press, and we did that back in June of last year.
And here we have Eric Overfield. He is the founder of Pixelmill. He is an avid speaker and organizer for SharePoint Saturdays and other SharePoint conferences. He also co-authored two books on SharePoint 2013. Now, we both worked with a lot of customers who found this very topic to be a pain point. So we thought, why not write a book about it? And today in this session, we hope that we will be able to share our experience with you. So by the end of this session, we hope you will learn what is responsive web design, why you need it, and specifically why you need it for SharePoint. At the end of it, we hope you walk away with the fundamentals of responsive web design and the responsive web design process, and of course, how to join responsive web design to your SharePoint solution. So without further ado, Eric, why don't you tell us what is responsive web design?
All right, responsive web design. How many people have heard of responsive design? Sweet, excellent. For those of how many have implemented in SharePoint? Whoa, a lot less.
Okay.
Good, that's why we're here, right? No problem.
Awesome.
So for those of you who've heard what it is, please indulge me while I go over the basics of what responsive design is. I want to make sure we're all at the same base level. So responsive design. Responsive design is a methodology. It was coined by a gentleman named Ethan Mercati in May of 2010. The concept of responsive design is it uses a defined set of concepts to allow us to build one website that addresses the pain points caused by an ever-growing number of internet devices started in about 2007, as Rita said. Responsive design gives us a strategy to build tailored interfaces for any device in truth theory. We'll, of course, dig into the specifics throughout this session, throughout the next hour, but keep in mind that for now, responsive design gives us the promise to allow us web developers to create one website for all browsers, for all internet devices, that will load the same site. And this is in contrast to where you have to design different channels or have multiple site implementations for desktop or mobile devices.
Wow, so that's responsive web design.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. But what about all these other buzzwords that I've been hearing about, like progressive enhancement, graceful degradation? What is that about?
So I think this is another important thing we really wanted to set a baseline. There's a lot of buzzwords going around right now about what is responsive design and how does it relate to all these other ideas. Now, if we go back to about 10, 12 years ago, when we were developing websites during the browser wars, when we had IE and Netscape and stuff, we started developing, the general community started developing two different methodologies of how to build a website. There was this idea of progressive enhancement, where you would design a website that at the base could serve any viewport, or any browser, basically, and then using progressive enhancement as a browser had more functionality, say it could use CSS, use JavaScript, your site would progressively enhance. There was another method that said, no, we'll try to gracefully degrade. We're going to throw everything on a site. We're going to say, this site best viewed in Netscape 3, and then we'll go ahead and try to gracefully degrade from that. Now, responsive design actually is a new methodology, but sort of fits in the middle of these. You can build a responsive site in either direction. So progressive enhancement is not responsive design. Responsive design can fit in the middle. Responsive design deals with layout. Primarily, it's a layout methodology. Since then, another concept came around called adaptive web design. You may have heard of this as well. Adaptive web design is more of a holistic approach to designing a website that will work across multiple viewports. And then finally, we have terms mobile first and desktop first that you may have heard of. Mobile first is a way to build a responsive, adaptive site that's using progressive enhancement-like ideas, where you're building towards a mobile device first, or you have a desktop device. For desktop first, it would be more like a graceful degradation. Another way to think of this is how we use the word Kleenex instead of tissue. If someone says, oh, would you please hand me a Kleenex, what you're saying is, I'd like tissue. Or if you say, oh, I need to go Xerox this, we know that that means what they really are saying is we need to make a photocopy of something. If someone comes to you and says, I need a responsive design or a responsive web design site, they're probably talking about a general term now that is both responsive and probably a little bit of adaptive, and they may be thinking mobile first or desktop first as well. So responsive design has kind of become a Kleenex-like or Xerox-like catch-all phrase for everything, even though it does have a defined set of principles. We're going to go over both. So I think next is, why is this important, Rita?
That's a good question. Now, show me of hands, how many of you guys actually ditched a website the very first time you loaded it on your mobile phone? How many of you actually ditched it?
Get guilty.
Now, do you ever go back to your desktop browser and say, oh, I think I'll try it there? Okay, so the point of that is we only have one chance to capture the attention of our end users, right? And we want to make sure that we capture that, and we want to make sure we give them a good experience on whatever device they're using. So we all know that, great user experience is not the product of technology alone. Now, SharePoint does provide a robust platform for creating websites, but it requires a blend of design and technology to really create great user experience across all browsers and all devices. Now, I don't know about you, but I have about like three of these guys, right? Now, you guys have different devices, and no two devices are exactly alike. And there's just so many of them, right? So in order to create great user experience, we need to know our users. We need to know how they're going to be using our site. We need to know what kind of device they're going to be using when they hit our site. When you know these things, then you can basically understand the range of your screen size, so you can design for that. You also know the different functionalities that your users are used to, so that, again, you can design for that. And you also need to know how the user is going to use this content on your site. Are they simply just consuming the content, or are they also going to create content? So these are the type of questions you should be asking yourselves. And that is how you can create a great user experience. So Eric, why don't you show us an example of what a responsive site looks like?
I'd be happy to. Now, a lot of us have probably seen this, but I want to, again, let's just go over this. This is a public-facing SharePoint 2013 site that is built in a responsive manner. So no voodoo magic. We're actually showing you something that's live. You would expect this to work how you normally would, where you've got drop-down navigation, and, of course, you've got content, right? So let's go ahead and let's look at what we're going to, let's look at what this will happen, let's look at how this will look on a mobile device. Four?
Yep.
Cool. Does that work? Excellent. Let me quickly re-log in. Have you guys seen these new wolf eyes? They're really cool. Okay. So this is the same site on a Surface here. And it basically looks the same, right? The viewport's fine. Now let's go ahead, and this is in portrait landscape. Let's change it to portrait. And what we can sort of see here is all the content has actually shrunk. So we no longer have those blue borders. And although it's hard to tell, but the top navigation, I mean, the font size is a little different. The top header in general has been scrunched to fit in a smaller viewport. But again, it's still reasonably touch-friendly. We can still navigate around. Now let's see something much more radical. Now remember, also remember, this is all one implementation. There's no separate site or anything like that. And you can view this now. It's my.calvet.ca.gov. Let's go ahead and look at it something radically different. Same exact site, and probably a lot of you have already seen something like this. This is the exact same site, running the exact same HTML master page, CSS, all that stuff. But now everything is all in one column. Everything's all, it's some automatically have been redesigned. Whoops, I hit a link. We'll go ahead and let that load. Shouldn't matter. While it's loading, we have now touch navigation that's touch friendly. If you want to get to search, you can have search, and it's all hidden. So what we tried to do here was minimize the amount of real estate that was actually used. So we hid things and whatnot. And that's effectively a responsive site, where you can have one site that will work well and tailor itself to all these different viewports.
Okay, so let's start with the fundamentals, right? Let's start with the fundamentals of responsive web design. And we're going to start that with the three pillars. Here are the three pillars of responsive web design. Now, both Fluid Grid and Flexible Media are not new. In fact, designers have been using these for years to really align and place content in an existing page layout. Media Queries is also not new, but the ability to apply different style sheets based on the viewport width and the viewport orientation of your device, that is, however, new in CSS3. So we're going to start with the first pillar. The first pillar is a Fluid Grid. A grid system is basically a combination of margins, rows, and columns. And we want to be able to utilize grid system in our design because that really helps us keep and create a good alignment. And a good alignment helps our visitors recognize a pattern. And it also helps us keep the content on our site clean. Now, traditionally, we're used to static grids. And now with unknown viewports, we really need a grid that is flexible that can resize itself based on its environment. And the way to do that is with a Fluid Grid. A Fluid Grid is based on percentage of the viewport rather than a static value for width. Next, we have Flexible Media. Flexible Media is all about the content. It allows the content to dynamically grow or shrink within a flexible column. Now, traditionally, the content we have, whether that is text, image, or video, on the web was designed to be suitable for a fixed width experience. But now that we're designing for responsive web sites, we need to think about how that content is going to adapt when we start looking at this content on different viewports. When designing for a responsive website, we need to account for the font type that is proportionate to the size of the view. Similarly, the same process should also be taken for images and video. With a Fluid Grid layout, the grid and the columns will resize depending on the size of your viewport. With flexible media CSS properties, when you resize the image container, the browser will basically resize your image so that the image's aspect ratio remains intact. Next, we have media queries. Driven by CSS3, it allows designers to basically use different style sheets based on the width of your viewport and the orientation of your viewport. Now, here we have an example at the top. And as you can see here, we have two inline media queries in our HTML page. And what the browser does is it will basically use the different CSS design sheet based on the minimum and maximum width of your viewport. Now, older browsers do not support this. So what we're recommending is that you should always add your media query blocks in your style sheet, like right below. Next, we have another example of media queries where the styles that we apply depending on the orientation of your device. So depending on how your user is actually going to hold their device, we're going to apply different styles, whether that is portrait or landscape.
So there's responsive design, right? We all go concoded. It's easy. No, of course not. I mean, but those are the three pillars. Those are what define responsive design as what it is. It's got the fluid grid. That's going to define how content is going to flow on a page. It's got the flexible media, making sure that all of the media, imagery, text, whatever, fits within the grid. And then finally, your CSS3 media queries, which allows you to change the layout of your grid dependent upon your viewport width. Awesome if that would do it, but unfortunately it doesn't. There's more to it than that. There's actually a lot of more little elements here and there that we would want to address. We don't really have time, so what we're going to do is we're going to address two to help get your mind thinking about what other things does the responsive design in and of itself not address. And so we're looking at these as what's beyond the pillars. We're going to look at two. One is how you might implement it, and the second one is an actual element that could cause you some problems. So first of all, we'll look at how we might implement it. Responsive design doesn't deal with how you're actually going to implement the grid, but we're highly recommending a mobile-first approach. Mobile-first approach, what you're going to be doing here is you're going to be building the mobile interface first. So your raw HTML and your raw original CSS with no media queries would define what your site should look on a mobile device. It's typically the best standard way to do things. And my little buttons. There we go. One of the reasons why we want to do this, and I'm going to show you a demo in a second, is this actually helps you control resources. And why we're doing this is because mobile devices are typically still on a cell network. Maybe they're a 3G network. And if you've got really large imagery that probably wouldn't even be viewed on a small viewport, you really don't want to send those images to them. And a mobile-first strategy helps you handle that. Also, if you go with a mobile-first strategy, it's going to force you to do what you should be doing anyhow, which is focusing on the content. People are coming to your website, no matter what kind of website it is, because they want to get to your content. Even if this is internet, public-facing, extranet, they're still trying to find content more likely than trying to add it. And you really want to have an approach that's going to help focus your design practice on that content. Mobile-first will do it, because on a mobile interface, you're probably only showing content and maybe a little bit of navigation or a little bit of imagery or something like that. There is something to think about, though, with mobile-first, which is IE8. IE8 is not mobile-first friendly because IE8 and IE7 cannot read CSS3 media queries. And we'll look at that in a bit so we can think about that. So what I want to do quickly here is look at a demo so we can quickly think about what mobile-first means in action and why we would do it. And this is one of the first things I saw that said, this is why I want to do mobile-first. What we're looking at here is just a standard site, and we can see that it's responsive. And instead of showing you different viewports, I'm going to do what I like to call the responsive mambo, which is I'm going to take my viewport and I'm just going to shrink it. So, you know, works how it should work, you know. Cool stuff. What I want you to pay attention to here is this main banner, this hero banner. And when you get to a certain viewport, this is about a tablet view, the image disappears. Let's go ahead and let's look at what that looks like in CSS. This container here is just called hero, so pretty standard, pretty straightforward. If we look at just the HTML, which is going to be right here, or the CSS, excuse me, what we're saying is everybody, go ahead and hide that hero image. Hide anything.
Zoom in.
Zoom in. How do you zoom in?
There you go. Okay.
Woohoo! In rehearsals, we don't have this problem, right? The monitor's right in front of us. I apologize. Thank you, though. So now, hopefully, we can see that. So can you see it in the back, at least? That's what I really care about. Yep. Good. So what we've got here is the hero banner. Anything with class hero is being said to display none. And I'm not going to go over too much CSS because this is 300 level, right? So hopefully we all have enough HTML CSS to get this stuff. What we're then showing is, okay, now if you have a viewport that's greater than 992 pixels, 992 above, then go ahead and cascade on top of that a hero, go ahead and display that, and more importantly here, go ahead and set the background image to our hero image. Now, of course, some of you coders should be like, wait, we normally don't do hero banners as backgrounds. I know, but this is an easy example to show where you would, where the mobile device would never have even loaded this second piece, this actual image, would never even seen it. Which is a good thing, because maybe my graphic artist who doesn't understand web design created a 500K image. I didn't realize it. I went ahead and put it up, and now I'm going to force a mobile device to download a 500K image they'll never see. Bad practice. So this, to me, is the main reason why I said, yep, mobile first is the way to go. This reason alone, and then I like clean code, so I don't want to do a combination, is why I said, nope, we want to stay with something like this. Okay. So that's mobile first in action, and the pillars don't really address that.
Okay. So earlier in his example, did you guys notice the navigation changing at the top when he went from a larger viewport to a smaller one? So we haven't talked about navigation up to this point, and this topic is not really responsive web design. It's a topic that is actually one of the harder decisions that you have to make in your design process, but it's nevertheless one important one. So some of the things that you have to think about, because this is you're creating a user experience for end users, is once you understand what type of device they're on and the different viewports they're on, you need to think about what kind of user experience you want to provide to your end users so that they can, in a user-friendly way, that they can navigate throughout your site on their little tiny tablet or tiny phone. So some of the decisions that you might have to make are like, do I want to have static navigation or do I want to have dynamic navigation? If you are considering using dynamic navigation, perhaps consider using the managed navigation feature new in SharePoint 2013. And some of these other considerations is also think about long-term effects of navigation. What if you have a lot of different nodes in your navigation, right? Consider multi-level drop-down navigations. Or how is the navigation going to affect the real estate, especially when you're on a small, tiny device like this? How is the navigation going to look on a small screen, right? So these are the questions that you should be asking. And a common practice in responsive navigation is to create different user experiences for different viewports. And, of course, now we are in SharePoint. So SharePoint very nicely provides us with out-of-the-box drop-downs, multi-level drop-down navigations for our desktop experience. But for mobile, we need to create a different touch experience.
So let me go over some quick mobile-friendly techniques that we would have. Now, think about the desktop. You're probably just going to use out-of-the-box SharePoint navigation because it works, right? It's fine. It has dynamic navigation, et cetera. But for a mobile navigation, you'll probably want to do something different. And how you would do this is you'd use media queries. You would build, in a sense, two navigation structures, one that you would show normally, your mobile navigation if you do mobile first, and then you'd have another one using media queries that you would then show your out-of-the-box navigation and use media queries to hide your mobile navigation. Four common ones are up there, and I want to quickly go over them. We have floating navigation, which what I'm defining by floating navigation is your out-of-the-box SharePoint navigation, where all the elements effectively float to the left, right? They have a float left, or they have a display inline block, or display inline, but that's more rare. This works fine on mobile device because as your viewport gets smaller, the additional elements that would not fit on the top line would just scroll to the next or fall to the next. Anything that couldn't fit on the second line would then fall to the third line, et cetera. Major problems are you can't have dynamic navigation because it's not touch friendly. You can't have any kind of hover event. So it won't work for if you have any dynamic navigation. And the second, my personal issue with it is really it uses up a lot of real estate. You may suck up a third of your screen, which is navigation, and that's pretty much a bad idea. So one of the first techniques that was designed to work against that or to help address that was drop-down navigation. In a drop-down navigation, what we're doing is we're using a select form field. We're going to build that select form field using jQuery. There are lots of jQuery libraries to do this for you. Go to Google, go to Bing, type in responsive drop-down navigation. You'll find plenty of jQuery libraries that will automatically parse your navigation and will create a drop-down list. Okay. My problems with this is, let's say you've got 10 top-level items and each item has 5 dynamic items. Your select box is going to go show 50 items. That's a lot in one list, because you can't have any kind of like, no, show me the next select box or something. Also, doesn't look very pretty. Third idea is collapsing navigation. And we've already seen collapsing navigation in our demo, but we'll go over it in a second. But that's effectively where you'd collapse your navigation down on a mobile view to a little hamburger button or a little, I think it's actually just called a hamburger, or a pillbox. A fourth navigation that's becoming more popular is off-canvas navigation. And a lot of you have probably seen this maybe on your Facebook app, possibly if you have an iPhone, but we all have Windows phones, right? So the Facebook iPhone app uses this off-canvas navigation where your navigation is hidden off-canvas. There's a little button there, a little hamburger button. You hit that, and your navigation appears on canvas, and it pushes typically your content off-canvas, becoming very popular. But we only have time to really demo one, so I wanted to quickly show us what collapsing navigation is in practice and how that might look. So let's go ahead and go back to our good little demo here. We have our standard navigation. What would happen, now this is using a mobile-first strategy. And by the way, this demo that you're seeing, this is an HTML prototype that we're going to make available to you on GitHub, and we'll put that under the Yammer group. We're going to eventually put this into SharePoint, into Office 365 by the end of the session. That's publicly available that you can see now. So once you see that, you can actually look at the code, use the element inspector, and you can see how we built all of our code. But this is using a mobile-first strategy, so the navigation structure you're seeing here is actually what would be shown because of media queries. By default, the navigation is actually going to be collapsed down, so I zoomed in here to be more of a mobile kind of look. Let's go ahead and hide this. Where we collapse it down to a button. So if you click the little button, which a lot of you are probably starting to get used to this little button here, and when you click it, your navigation would appear and it would hide. Now, what's really nice about collapsing navigation is that typically you can turn this into just very simple code. In fact, it's one little JavaScript function that basically says, here's this button. When it's viewable, mobile viewports only, when it gets clicked, it adds a class to the structure that's defining your navigation. And we've got all the code for this, so you'll be able to see all this. But when that class is then shown, we're using CSS3 transitions here, we can get an animated effect by adding one simple class and about four lines of JavaScript code. Pretty cool technique. So that was all fun and dandy, right? That was all the academic theory that we wanted to go over. And okay, we're doing okay on time. This is about where we wanted to be. What's really important now, of course, is how are we going to build this thing, right? I mean, that's why probably a lot of you are here, because we already knew this. But again, I wanted to make sure we're all at the same baseline. What's really important is how are we going to build this site? Now, we're going to be able to build a responsive site in SharePoint pretty quick at the end. And the reason why we're going to be able to do it is because we've done all the planning up front. A lot of the planning is not at all responsive specific, nor is it SharePoint specific. If you plan well up front, you're going to find doing a responsive site is much, much, much more easy. So first of all, what you probably should already have been doing is, of course, planning your site, right? You need to know why, what's the business value or the organizational value of this website, what kind of content it's going to have, what's the hierarchical order of it, what's the information architecture. If you want to learn how to do all that stuff, of course, go to all the other sessions, because that's what a lot of them are talking about. We've done this. It's all the same. Responsive is not any different. With responsive design, with normal design, you typically, when you're building a SharePoint site that was going to be semi-custom or custom, you needed to wireframe it. Then you needed to prototype it, right? You needed a mock-up, some sort of mock-up. What's different here is that you're going to have to build a wireframe and a mock-up, or multiple, for multiple viewports. In particular, you need at least a small mobile site, and you need to know what your site's going to look like and how content's going to get laid out on a desktop experience or a large viewport experience. The thing about responsive design is it is not magic pixie dust you can sprinkle over your site and it magically works. A lot of planning goes into this, and just because you're using a fluid grid does not mean the site's going to look the way you might want it to or need it to look on a mobile device. So because of that, you're going to need to build wireframes and mockups for viewports, for different viewports, in particular, designed to the extremes. What I mean by this is, what's your site going to look like on a mobile device? What's the layout of content going to be? And graphically, what do you want? Are you going to be hiding images? Are you going to have a simple menu at the top, etc.? Then what's it going to look like on a reasonable large viewport? Now, you can design to a 4,000 pixel wide monitor if you want. And in theory, responsive design should allow you to build an infinitely wide site. Practically, that doesn't make any sense. Very few people have it. And do you know how hard it is to fill up content that's 500, 4,000 pixels wide or something? You're probably going to pick a practical maximum viewport anywhere between 1,200 to 1,600 pixels. I mean, we have common 1,900 pixel wide monitors, but it's actually pretty hard to fill up content very well that goes really wide. Now, it definitely could be done, but practically, a lot of the people in this room are not going to be—they're not going to have the resources to go through that kind of effort. If you design to the extremes, you'll have a lot easier time trying to figure out fill in the middle than it will be if you start in the middle and try to lay things out based on now in a viewport that's small as well as a viewport that's large. Okay, so possibly you had a team that already did the business analyst for you, then another team, a design team, came up with wireframes and mockups, but most of us here are the SharePoint folk that have to actually do the implementation. When you're doing that planning, you want to remember SharePoint and you want to be involved in that process. Probably a lot of us are doing the whole process. I feel sorry for you guys. I know it's hard, but hopefully you have some people helping with the business analysts and some of those mockups. Remember SharePoint, though, when you're doing that, because you're going to want to think about where are things going to go when you actually code this into SharePoint in the planning phase. I have found that anything is possible with SharePoint. That does not mean you should do it, right? Like, is it really a good idea to move our sweet bar, our ribbon? Probably not. It's going to cause you more hassle than it's worth. So if your design team is saying, hey, let's go ahead and move that stuff, you should be thinking, no, I don't want to do that. Also, when you're looking at your wireframes and your mockups, you should be thinking, what am I actually going to be putting into the master page? What am I going to be putting into the page layouts, and how am I going to lay things out? This becomes really important with things like navigation, and how am I going to handle it? How am I going to code up the SharePoint navigation so that it actually fits well on a desktop and a mobile device? You'll also have to think about things like where the quick launch is going to go if you're going to have it. If you're building a responsive intranet, you may be using the quick launch, right? Well, normally that goes in the master page, but what if you have to hide that? What if on a mobile device you want it to collapse or something? All of this is possible, and I couldn't go into all the myriad possibilities, but if you're planning this out and you're thinking during the planning stage, where's this all going to go, it's going to make your life a lot easier. And you may end up telling your design team, hey, look, we really don't want to do that because that's not going to make sense. It's going to be a little too difficult to code that up. So if you do the best you can to always be remembering SharePoint when you're actually doing this site planning, it's going to make implementation much, much easier. So with that, what I'm hoping Rita can do for us is show us what that looks like. So please give us a demo of what the site planning looks like and why it's a little different.
Sure. So here we have an example where we're building a responsive SharePoint site for our customer who's in the real estate business. And as Eric mentioned earlier, we want to be able to identify our extremes, right? So for a particular example, we have two extremes. We have the desktop experience, and we also have the mobile phone experience. And also earlier, we mentioned that you want to identify and start planning and design for mobile first. So you want to start with the mobile and then slowly add on and so that you can have the full version of the your solutions on the desktop experience. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to get these wireframes and mockups from our designers for these two particular extremes. And what we're going to ask them to provide to us is, how is the navigation going to look for these two extremes? And what kind of content you're going to show us for these two extremes? What are the things that you're going to hide? What are the things you want to be able to show your end users? And what's your grid going to look like? So these are the type of things that you should ask your design team to provide you so that basically you know what you're designing for and how everything's supposed to look at the end. So here, what you can see here is our wireframe. So again, starting with mobile. So here we have our mobile phone experience where we are saying, for my site, I'm going to have everything in a single column, in a single column grid. And starting from the top, we have the logo, and we also have the search box. And here, as you can see, we have the collapsing navigation. And in the middle, we do not want to show our end user the hero banner at the top. And going down the body, again, all of the content we have, the rich media and all the images, they're all placed in one single column grid. And again, at the bottom, here's where our footer is down below. And next, once we identify what we need for our mobile experience, here next what we have is the full desktop experience. And this is something that looks very familiar with what we traditionally do. And here what you have is at the top the logo, and again the search box to the right. And then here is the full navigation bar that we're used to and what our end user will want to do and have. And here at the top is where we want to show that hero banner. We want to show the rotator. And going down, as you can see, this looks a little bit different from the mobile experience. And again, here's where our designer basically said, you know what, for the full desktop experience, I want to have three columns for my grid. And that is something you should be thinking about and designed for, the three columns going down the body. And going down below, you also see the footer. And again, the footer, again, a three-column grid that you should be planning and designed for. So that's our wireframe. Now going down, let's look at what everything's going to look like in a full fidelity mock-up. So again, starting from mobile, this is the type of experience your end user is going to have on a small mobile phone device. And again, the logo at the top, search box, and collapsing navigation. And here we have some mock-ups of what the body is going to look like on a mobile phone. And again, a single column grid. And going down, we also have some rich media. And going down, we have everything, all the footer wrapped in one single column. So that's our mobile experience. Now let's look at what the experience the users will have on a full fidelity mock-up for our desktop experience. And here, again, our traditional logo to the top left corner, our search box, and our full navigation bar, and here's our banner again. And going down, again, we have some media, we have some images going down a three-column grid. So what I just did is I basically walk you guys through what you should be asking for from your design team. And that is going to help us understand what the end product look like. And you always want to engage your project stakeholders, engage your business analysts, and make sure that this is exactly what your business users are looking for. So now that we have our design, let's code it, right? And that's why we're here. And before we code it, this is where we take the design and we want to create a responsive HTML prototype. And again, with the prototype, we can then show to our project sponsors and business users and make sure that this is the type of experience that they're looking for. So before we dive into the code, now earlier I mentioned the importance of utilizing the grid system in your design to make sure that we keep the content clean and create alignment. Now, of course, you can go ahead and create this design, this grid yourself, and you can make sure it's fluid and you can add media queries and all that stuff yourself to make it responsive. Or better yet, why not leverage existing responsive frameworks? And the reason why we want to use existing response frameworks is that you can leverage the experience and the components that other developers like yourself have done and basically leverage the common practice and the work that other people have contributed to the open source community. And again, with these pre-existing frameworks, it really saves us a lot of time so that you can spend your time and budget worrying about things that for your end solution and how everything's going to look and how everything's going to work in SharePoint. And a lot of these frameworks provides us a lot of extras, so things like navigation. So when you go to these frameworks that I'm going to show you in just a little bit, it's actually going to ask you what kind of components you want to download. And for my particular example, I'm going to leverage the collapsing navigation, so I'm going to go ahead and download that, and I'm going to add that to my end solution. Now, you can always just download the bare minimum and make sure that works and leverage that framework in your solution. Now, with any frameworks, there's pluses and minuses. So if you have worked with some of these frameworks, the second time around is going to be a lot easier. If you have not worked with these frameworks, or if your developers have not worked with these frameworks, you want to make sure that you give yourself enough ramp-up time. Because you want to make sure that you understand these components and you want to understand how to use them in your solution. So make sure you incorporate that time in your project planning phase. And of course, we are working with SharePoint, so a lot of these frameworks don't work with SharePoint out of the box. So you have to, again, spend some time, tweak some of the CSS and JavaScript to make sure that the framework works for SharePoint. Or better yet, there are actual responsive frameworks that are designed specifically for SharePoint. So you can basically download those and make sure you have a responsive SharePoint site in less than 10 minutes. And I will walk you guys through that in a little bit. And so in the vault, why do I want you guys to use existing framework? Because it saves us a lot of time, and you really, again, utilizing what other developers like yourself have done and contributed to the open source community. So here are some common frameworks that we've used on past projects that and we have loved. And there's no particular order or anything, but for the rest of our demos and presentation, we're going to be using the Twitter Bootstrap framework. And at the end of this presentation, we also provided a lot of resource links that you can take with you so that you can go read and learn about it on your own time. So, Eric, why don't you walk us through how to incorporate Bootstrap framework and create a responsive HTML prototype?
Excellent. Go ahead and... So we've got two demos left. This is a biggie, and the next one after this is even bigger. So this is what you're here for, we know, but again, we wanted to set us all up here. This is an HTML prototype. As Rita has said, it's a lot easier now with SharePoint 2013 to build an HTML prototype and migrate it into SharePoint using Design Manager. This isn't a Design Manager session, so although we're going to use it, we're not going into the specifics of it. There's plenty of good documentation on that. But building the HTML prototype first is going to help you a lot because you can get your project sponsors and your stakeholders to sign off on the implementation in HTML of your end site. You can get the functionality right. You can make sure that things respond the way you want. Let's go ahead and what I mean by that, of course, that it drops down. And that you can also then put this out on just any kind of web server as straight HTML, make sure that browsers will, or different viewports will be able to view it just fine. It's going to be a lot easier in HTML only to get your stuff to work. And what's also helpful is you might be saying, yeah, but a lot of this is going to be driven by display templates and content by search web parts and stuff like this. Yes, but if you have the HTML already working and it already has the styling applied to it, it's going to be a lot easier to make your display templates use that HTML than it will be to just try to design something from scratch. So when we have a simple website like this, of course, we're going to need HTML, right? So in our HTML, let's go ahead and can we read it? Can we see this in the back? Do I need to zoom in anymore? Okay, I seem to be seeing some nods. Good. This is straight HTML. This is HTML5 only because of the tag, but a lot of people ask, oh, well, responsive is HTML5. No, not necessarily. The only thing you really care about is CSS3 for media queries, but you don't need to use HTML5 tags. We do, but you don't need to. This is just straight HTML. We're using all the technologies we always did, and by leveraging a framework, we don't even have to know how things are truly responsive. We don't really need to care. You should, but you don't need to. Things that are going to be important are linking to your, to the framework that you're going to use. So here we're doing Bootstrap. So we went and downloaded Bootstrap, which is just getbootstrap.com, and they've got a great way to customize it so you only get what you need, because it could be pretty heavy. You typically also need to set something like the viewport meta tag. What this is telling is a certain device, it's telling different devices how to actually load the page, because a lot of mobile devices will happily view something at 960 or 992 pixels, meaning they won't get the mobile interface. What this is saying is, hey, viewport, make sure that the width of your browser is the same as your device width. You'll typically link to JavaScript, nothing special there, but oftentimes your frameworks might have a JavaScript library. Okay, well, Bootstrap, what we want the Bootstrap JavaScript library for is for that collapsing navigation. That will take care of that magic little JavaScript that I mentioned that when you click on a button, it'll add the class that you need. Pretty sophisticated, fun little stuff. And then, of course, you'll link to your own JavaScript if you need to. No big deal. I did want to point out that just like in SharePoint, how you typically should not be editing out-of-the-box files, same thing with any framework. Just add your own custom JavaScript, your own custom style sheets, and in your own files. That way, if the framework ever changes, you can more easily just go update the framework and see if that will... And you won't have to try to like merge your changes in quite the same way. So if we start to look at how to use what's called the scaffolding. Now we don't have enough time to talk about like in-depth scaffolding of Bootstrap, but typically your frameworks they'll have documentation on the scaffolding, which is how are you going to design your HTML? What structure do you need to use? What classes do you need to use to build a grid? The responsive piece is going to come kind of second. What's important is to build the grid. You're going to be building columns and spans, and you'll have already made these decisions in your wireframes and your mockups. So here we have a row, straight up row. We'll see this in our header. So I did use an HTML5 element, but it was not relevant. We have a row, and in Bootstrap, we can set these things called calls with a number. So here the important number is 8. What that's saying is this span here, this div, is going to go through 8 columns. We could then have 4 columns. So we have a 4 for a total of 12. Most frameworks have 12 columns out of the box. They provide you a grid with 12 columns, and you can just divide, you can divide up your spans, your columns, into how many actual columns you want to take up. So here I have an 8 column, and I have a 4 column, which we'll see later. By using this scaffolding, by using these column class names, we'll see how things react in a responsive manner, how blocks will end up, instead of being side by side, will be on top of each other and whatnot. But then you may say, hey, what's going on here? There's no call associated with this. This is some social thing. What's up with that? You can't do that, right? Of course you can. This is just HTML CSS. There's no real magic going on here. This is a div that we could just absolutely position, which is what we decided to do with this. You don't have to have things, you know, you don't have to stay within the framework if you don't need to. If you want to move something out, it's okay. This is just HTML and CSS. If we see another example, I'm going to skip navigation because it's pretty boring. It's basically just a row and with a column that goes all the way across. And all the scaffolding of how to actually use navigation would be typically in your framework, which is something like Bootstrap. We can see that we have another main container where all of our main content is. And remember I kept telling you, remember SharePoint? This comes in coding your prototype as well. If you use Design Manager, or if you've ever tried to convert an HTML prototype to SharePoint, you know you're going to have to replace all your static code with SharePoint controls. It's, even if you're going to do the whole process yourself, it's going to help to know what static content's going to get replaced with what control. So here, because this was designed by Rita and then implemented by me, Rita was nice enough to say, hey, look, here's where the main content placeholder is going to go. And hopefully a lot of us have branded SharePoint. We know what content placeholders are, because I don't have time to go into that. So we're able to say, hey, look, you know, until you see an end comment, all the rest is just, that's going to get replaced by a content placeholder, and the rest is probably going to be in a page layout. But we can see we have rows again with columns, but then scaffolding typically allow you to do other things like nested rows. We have a row here with a column of 12, so this is full span, but then we have another row within that row where we split it up into 4 sub-columns. Now, what nested rows allow you to do is, if this was not a 12 but instead was an 8, since everything is percentage-based, we'll see that these 3 columns would have only taken up 1/3 of 2/3 of your screen. And by using a framework like Bootstrap, and most of them can do nesting rows, you don't have to worry about why and how that works. All you need to do is make sure you use the scaffolding correctly. Is that sort of making some sense? What I want to try to do here is demystify a little bit. This is not actually that complex. You just need to use the framework and use the scaffolding, and it's just HTML and CSS. The CSS in general that we did was basically, we just had to style this. We didn't need to worry too much about responsive or any extra of our own media queries because the scaffolding took care of that for us. The framework took care of that for us. It does help to know, as I remember, but you don't have to do it. So I'm now going to look at the element selector. So we can actually see this now in action. All I did was hit F12 for those of you who don't know this. Otherwise, it's in the tools, where'd it go? Developer tools. If you're branding SharePoint and you haven't used the element selector and developer toolbar, I don't know how you've been doing it. So I think most of us have seen this, and all major browsers do have this. But we can go ahead and we'll go ahead and grab a tool, or we'll go ahead and grab an element. You're not going to be able to see that at the bottom, are you? Okay, let's see if I can zoom in. Nope, it's not going to let me zoom in, huh? Sorry for those in the back. But we have the same containers and rows that we saw before, and hopefully you can see, at least in blue, what I'm trying to select is a row. And then we have our column 8, which takes up 1/3, or 2/3. We have a span of 4, which takes up 1/3. And then you're not going to be able to see this too well, but when I clicked on the social, up in the upper right-hand corner is a little pinkish bar, but you can hopefully see the vertical lines that are coming down from that. So you can see that I'm just absolutely positioning that. It doesn't really matter what the CSS is, because we all know that. It's just an absolute position div. I mean, what? Position absolute, top 0, right 0. And what that does is that provides us with our little drop-down social bar. Now let's go ahead and see this as a mobile view. So I'm going to go ahead and scrunch this down. And I apologize, again, that you can't really see this in the back. But we can see now, I got to go a little smaller. There we go. I can see now that my column 8 is now stacked 100% across. My column 4 is also 100% across. Because this is what CSS, this is what a responsive design typically do, is it will stack your elements when you get down to a certain viewport. I don't need to know what the CSS did because I just followed the scaffolding. I didn't need to do anything really. I built it in the structure that Bootstrap provided, and basically everything automatically works. I think it's pretty cool, pretty simple too. Once you start to see the elements and go, wow, this really isn't that hard. So in a quick nutshell, that really is it. Once you have this HTML prototype, it won't be that difficult to now move this into SharePoint, which is really what our last demo is going to be. And that one is, as I keep trying to tell you guys, it's intense. It's fast. I just want to prepare everybody for it. So that's responsive.
Okay, so that's a great responsive HTML prototype, right? But this is SharePoint conference after all, and we want to see it in SharePoint, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Now, so for time, so before we dive into that, I'm actually going to briefly talk about some of the key components that you want to be to really look at and convert to from your HTML prototype to SharePoint. Now, in SharePoint 2013, we now have a new feature called Design Manager. And what Design Manager does is that it distills HTML pages into master pages for you. And so there's a huge implications here, right? Is that you don't necessarily have to have special knowledge of SharePoint tags and SharePoint controls so that you can have you and your designer and your developers focus on the HTML prototype and focus on the artifacts, focus on the HTMLs, and make sure that it's responsive and less worrying about SharePoint. And so that once they're done with that, they can hand off the artifacts and the HTML pages to your SharePoint team. And once your SharePoint team uploads that into SharePoint, and SharePoint effectively will convert all this stuff for you. And it is actually recommended that you should always be working with SharePoint HTML master pages rather than the SharePoint master page for those of you who have done branding in prior versions of SharePoint. And another nice thing about all this is that, like I said earlier, we want to leverage existing frameworks. So what happens now is that you can actually upload these frameworks to SharePoint, and you are able to have an unbranded responsive SharePoint in no time. And another nice feature in SharePoint 2013 we love is a snippet gallery. And again, you don't have to have specific knowledge of how SharePoint components work. But you can still leverage all these SharePoint components, like SharePoint logos, SharePoint search box, dynamic SharePoint navigation, security trimming, the list goes on, right? So it basically allows you to pick and configure these SharePoint components in Snippet Gallery, and then you can basically copy the HTML snippets right into your SharePoint HTML page so that you can start using it in your master page. So let's dive into our demo. Now here, we actually did our demo on Office 365, and that's the URL. And actually, the end product is already done, so you guys can navigate to that link right now on your mobile phone or tablet, so that you can actually follow us if you want to. Now, we've done this on Office 365, and because of time constraints and all that, we basically compress all this stuff into a nice video for you so that you can actually look at this stuff after the session on your own time while you're designing for your own solution. So I'm gonna go ahead and switch to our demo really quickly. And I'm gonna talk through this as the video is playing. So here, as you can see, I started with a vanilla SharePoint Office 365 site, and here's my home page. And here is the HTML prototype that Eric just did prior in the previous demo. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come to SharePoint, and I'm going to go to my Design Manager, as I mentioned earlier. So once you click on Design Manager, there's all these options for you to use. And what you're going to do is click Upload Design File, and this actually gives us a file location for our master page gallery. And you can actually map this to your network drive so that you can start doing the design on your system. So here what I'm gonna do is I'm actually uploading the HTML prototype that Eric just did, and as well as all these other artifacts and framework that we're uploading to SharePoint. So once I've done that, I'm gonna go ahead and click Edit Master Page. And what I'm doing here is actually telling SharePoint, go ahead and help me convert my HTML master page to a SharePoint master page. So once I click on that, Within SharePoint, I'm going to go ahead and go to a Spectre group, which is my folder for my my master page. And I'm going to go ahead and select that HTML master page I just uploaded. And SharePoint is going to ask me, do you want to publish it? I know I'm going to keep working on it, so I say ignore. And once I hit OK, at this point, SharePoint will basically take my HTML master page and convert it to a SharePoint master page. And here, as you can see in the status column, it's actually converted successfully. So I'm going to go ahead and click on that. And once you click on that, it's actually going to show your SharePoint converted master page in a preview mode. And here, as you can see, I'm going to scroll to the bottom. The yellow tag that you see at the bottom is actually the content placeholder, as Eric mentioned earlier. And that is basically how SharePoint is going to place the content in your pages and your page layout dynamically into your master page. So, of course, I don't want it to be at the bottom. So what I'm going to do is, now I'm in SharePoint Designer, I'm actually going to go ahead and navigate to the converted HTML page that I have. And I'm going to go ahead and try, once I find that, then I'm going to go ahead and edit. So now I'm going to open it in edit mode. And here, as you can see, SharePoint added all these SharePoint controls and tags and whatnot. This is nice because I don't have to worry about making sure that this works in SharePoint, because SharePoint effectively does it for me. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to go all the way to the bottom, find that yellow tag for the content placeholder div. So once I find that, I'm going to go ahead and remove that yellow tag, the yellow div. I don't need that. So I'm going to go ahead and take that div, the content placeholder, from the bottom. I'm going to move it all the way to the top where I want to, where I want my dynamic content to be placed in my master page. And as Eric mentioned earlier, I know where I want this guy, so I actually put a comment in my HTML, and I'm going to go ahead and drop that in there. Now, once this is in my HTML page, I'm going to go ahead and move my static navigation, the one that I got from Eric. I'm going to go ahead and take that. I'm going to go ahead and move that and move it into my content placeholder, because I know in a little bit I might actually want to change the static navigation to a dynamic one, and we're going to walk through that in a little bit. So what I'm doing now is I'm basically pasting the static navigation into my content placeholder. So once I've done that and reformat it, I'm going to go ahead and save it. So once this is saved, now it is actually available in SharePoint. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go back to SharePoint and, again, back to my preview mode, and I'm going to go ahead and refresh it. So once I refresh this, guys, you're going to see that, look, there's my navigation now in the content placeholder, and the content placeholder at the bottom, of course, is gone. So once I have this, then I want to say, well, this is all great, but I actually want some SharePoint components. So I'm going to click on the snippet link at the top, as you can see on the right corner, and that's actually going to take me to the snippet gallery. So once I'm in the snippet gallery, for this demo, what I'm going to do is, instead of my static logo, I'm actually going to utilize the SharePoint logo control. So I'm going to click on site logo, and as you guys can see at the top, there's a bunch of SharePoint components, and you can actually use any one of them. So for time's sake, I'm just going to go ahead and use a SharePoint out-of-the-box logo so you guys can see what's going on here. And again, if you can see on the right side, you can actually configure this. You can actually configure this so that you know you can change the navigation or the way it looks. Now, again, at the left side, you saw that there's actually an HTML snippet. So once you have the HTML snippet, I'm going to go ahead and I copied those HTML snippet from my snippet gallery, and now I'm going to place it right in my SharePoint HTML master page. And like I said earlier, I basically found where I have my current logo, and I'm going to replace that static logo with the SharePoint logo control. And once I've done that, again, as you can see here, I'm just going to go ahead and I placed it in the SharePoint HTML page. And next, what I'm going to do is I want to use the SharePoint navigation snippet. So here, for time's sake, I'm basically just going to take the HTML snippet that I got from SharePoint and place that dynamic SharePoint navigation control into my HTML master page. So what I'm doing now is I'm just replacing the static navigation with the dynamic one that I want in my SharePoint site. So once I've done that, And again, see here, this is basically what is produced from the SharePoint snippet gallery. So once I've done that, I'm going to go ahead and save this page in SharePoint Designer. And again, here I'm going to come back to SharePoint in the preview mode. And now, as you can see, now I have the SharePoint out-of-the-box logo. And I also have the SharePoint dynamic navigation. As you can see, now I have the SharePoint dynamic navigation shown. Now, this doesn't quite look exactly like the styles that I want. So I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste the style I want in my style.css, which is also in my master page gallery. So once I've pasted those styles into my style sheet, then now I'm going to go ahead and refresh it again. And here, as you can see, I am using the SharePoint dynamic navigation control in my master page, and I am using also the styles that I want. So once I've done that, now I am actually ready to use this master page, and I'm ready to apply it to my site. Now, before I do that, and here is how I would do that. And now, before I do that, I actually have to go ahead and publish my master page. So I'm going to go back to my master page gallery in my Spectre Group folder, and I'm going to find that HTML master page. And as you can see, once I'm there, and as you can see, there's actually an HTML master page and a SharePoint master page. I'm going to go ahead and publish the HTML master page. And here, once it's published, then it becomes available for me to pick from in that master page dropdown. So once I click on master page, and here, as you can see, this is where I can go ahead and select my demo master page. And once I hit OK, now this becomes the default master page that I want to use for my site. So now once I refresh my home page, now as you can see, the default home page is now using the new master page that I just created. Now this doesn't quite look exactly like what I want, but as you can see, I now have a responsive home page, right? And I'm getting that collapsing navigation at the top. Now this doesn't quite look like our mock-up just yet. Now before we actually how do we actually get there? Let's go ahead and create a new page layout. So I'm going to go ahead and go back to my design manager. So once I'm in design manager, I'm going to go ahead and say edit page layouts. And edit page layouts actually allows me to edit and create new page layouts. So I'm going to go ahead and click on create a new page layout. So at this point, I'm going to give it a new name for my new page layout. Let's call it SG homepage demo. So once that's done, as you can see, I can actually select what master page I want to use. I'm going to go ahead and use the new master page I just created in the previous step. And again, you can actually choose whatever content type you want. And so very similar to how you would do it with any other page layout. So once I hit OK, at this point, I have a new page layout. Now, this new page layout is going to utilize that new master page. But again, it's not exactly what I want. So now let's go back to SharePoint Designer. I'm going to go ahead and find that page layout, again, under master page gallery. So once I find the new page layout, I'm going to edit. And again, notice how I'm editing the HTML page and not the ASPX page. So again, notice how SharePoint actually added a lot of these SharePoint components for me. And again, I don't have to worry too much about actually enable this and make sure that it works for SharePoint. Now, within this guy, under the content placeholder, there's actually a bunch of divs, the out-of-the-box div that I'm just going to go ahead and take it out. And I'm going to go ahead and borrow what I've done before this demo, and I'm going to go ahead and copy some of that content that I want for the header, the banner, and the images, the three image column that we talked about in the previous mock-up. So I'm going to go ahead and copy that, and I'm going to place it right under my content placeholder. So once that is done, I'm going to go ahead and save it. So once I save it, it becomes available to SharePoint, and now I'm going to go back to Design Manager. And here, as you can see, I have the latest page layout, and before I can start use it, I need to publish it. So I'm going to go ahead and publish it. And once I publish it, now let's go back to our homepage. Once I'm on the homepage, I'm going to go ahead and edit so that I can actually use the new page layout. So I'm going to go ahead and edit, and then I'm going to go ahead and select the new page layout, as you can see here. And because I published it, it is available to me. So voila. So this basically looks exactly like our mockup. And we just did that pretty quickly. And again, once you're done, then we can go ahead and use that. So here, if you guys have it also following on your own mobile device, here is what the site that I just created. And again, for time's sake, that I only showed you guys using SharePoint logos and SharePoint navigation control. But actually for our site, we actually also utilize the SharePoint search control as well as the security trim control so that when users are not logged in, they actually get to register. So that was actually pretty quick, right? We were able to go from a SharePoint.
Thank you. I told you it'd be an intense demo, people. It was a lot, we know.
Yeah, I try to talk really, really fast. So we actually able to take what Eric had done in the previous demo, all pure responsive HTML page, and we put it in SharePoint, and I did that in less than 10 minutes, right? Now, the reason why it took me only about 10 minutes is because we did so much work prior to coming to SharePoint. We make sure that it's responsive by leveraging responsive framework. We make sure that we have a fluid grid. We are using media queries. And we did all that stuff even before we even came to SharePoint. Now, if we had started with a pure HTML page with no responsiveness, then you would have had to do all that stuff once you are in SharePoint. So I want to make sure if anything that you are taking away from this session is make sure that you design and make sure your site is responsive even before you come to SharePoint.
Pretty cool, huh? I mean, it's because we planned it well. And yeah, we didn't add a lot of snippets in. I know that was all still static content in the page layout. Yes, just go ahead and put in your controls and you can move all that over. That should be pretty academic, pretty simple to do. I think what's really cool is how once you build that HTML prototype, it's not really that hard to move it into SharePoint. It does, of course, help to have built the HTML structure a little more SharePoint friendly. That just comes with some experience of knowing what SharePoint is going to want to do. But it's really not that hard. Okay, so we still have a lot more left, surprisingly left, but we want to look at what we've talked about. We talked about responsive design, why was this important. We looked at the fundamentals being those three primary pillars, right? We need to remember that. Fluid grid, flexible media, CSS3 media queries. We also looked a little bit beyond that. We looked at things like mobile first. We looked at things like navigation. We looked at the responsive process starting from gathering the content and then going ahead and adding in doing the wireframing, the mockup, things like that. We finally, then after we had an HTML prototype, we then moved it into SharePoint using SharePoint 2013's new design manager because it really helped. There are some other things to think about, though. I told you I was going to come back to mobile first and IE8, and here's what it is. Basically, IE8, IE7 cannot use CSS3 media queries out of the box. So that's going to be a problem because IE8 is going to only be able to see the mobile view. Major problem, right? Two ways to get around this, two common ways. You can use an IE8 style sheet. You can also use JavaScript libraries. There's a couple of them that are out there. You just dump in a library, a popular one's called CSS3 Media Queries, funny enough. And you just dump in that library, and IE8 can now use media queries. How this would look like in code, is this would go in the head tag. Probably a lot of you have seen this if you've been developing websites for a little while. Is in the head tag, you can put in this kind of comment. All browsers except IE will ignore it. This looks like a comment to them. But for any version of IE, since like IE 4 or 5, it will realize that, look at that code and say, well, if I'm less than 9, if IE is less than 9, IE8, IE7, then go ahead and process that next line, which says, go ahead and load an IE8 style sheet. That IE8 style sheet can then provide additional styles to tell IE8 how to actually appear. Typically, IE8 is only a desktop experience, so you might just say, hey, here's a desktop grid. IE8, you don't get a responsive site. Why do they need it? Or you can design responsive like features in your IE8 style sheet. Lots of ways you can do that. With a JavaScript library, you can use the same kind of comment. You just link to the JavaScript library, and that's all you have to do. But it does require JavaScript, and it is a little more processing. So it's up to you. First technique requires a little more work, but I think it's a little cleaner. The second technique uses JavaScript, but it's more simple. You just link to the library, and you're good to go.
And earlier I mentioned that, you know, other than existing responsive frameworks, we also have a couple of responsive frameworks designed specifically for SharePoint. So tonight, after the all this session is done, you can actually go try these out in your hotel rooms, and you can basically have a non-branded responsive SharePoint in less than 10 minutes. So definitely go out there and try it. Now, the first one is actually utilizing Bootstrap and Foundation frameworks.
So these two would be skipping the HTML prototype stage, but this is a great way to see responsive in SharePoint. Literally, like 5-10 minutes. You just download this, you dump it onto a development server you've got, and you would have a responsive site. I think it's a great way to get started, and then you could look at, okay, now that I understand more of HTML and responsive, you can then do, I think, the more proper way, which is build your HTML prototype. You'll find that's a lot easier. Okay, what we want you to walk away with, though, this is going to be sort of the biggie here. 90% of the process of responsive has been overviewed. This is the stuff that you could probably learn pretty quick if you just dive into it. What we want to go over is what we've learned over the last couple years that hopefully you can walk away like these are the important things.
Now, in case I haven't said this enough and in case it wasn't obvious in our sessions, is try to utilize pre-existing responsive frameworks, and better yet, try to utilize SharePoint-ready responsive frameworks, because it will save you a lot of time and you can follow common practice. The next tip I have is, unlike your traditional SharePoint branding projects where you're designing for one interface, this type of projects you're actually designing for multiple devices and multiple use cases. So try to meet with your project sponsors and stakeholders early on so that they understand the nuances of designing responsive website for SharePoint, so that they understand the complexity and that you have enough budget and resources to make sure you have a successful delivery. And make sure that you're developing for the real world. Understand your end users and understand the devices that they're using. Don't spend time on things that might not be relevant. For example, why worry about SharePoint ribbons when 99% of your users are actually consuming the content on their mobile device?
Along those lines, don't break SharePoint. I know in previous versions we were more likely to do this. With responsive, this is going to be more difficult if you end up breaking SharePoint to get your branding to work. Work within SharePoint. If you get stuck, ask the community, ask other people, hey, I'm trying to do something, what's going on? I don't know what to do. So really don't break SharePoint. The reason why I would say you might would be like for a ribbon. Chances are your mobile users are going to be consuming content only. They're not going to be authoring content. The authoring experience on almost any site, including popular ones like Wikipedia, are not very strong on a mobile device yet. We just don't have the ideas of how to do it. So you should probably disable that. So go ahead and use media queries to hide the ribbon for mobile devices. Get it? Yep, I would probably do that. I highly recommend mobile first. It's going to be different than any website you've built before, but it is the industry best standard, and there's a good way to do it. There's a good reason to do that. So mobile first is the way to go. It's worth the effort to learn how to do it the right way.
Make sure you and your developers are very comfortable with CSS and HTML. We are designing for a responsive website. We are working with media queries, lots of JavaScript, CSS, nested elements, and HTML. So make sure you and your resources understand and are comfortable with CSS and HTML, and make sure that you can actually build it from scratch. And again, this might be another reason why you want to utilize existing frameworks, because a lot of the heavy lifting has already been done for you.
Two more left. You got to test. Just because responsive it says it's supposed to work on any viewport doesn't mean it will. You're going to have to test some more. If you know this is for an intranet and you're going to be using the Windows Phone, the Surface, and Windows IE 11, great. Test on those three devices, because just because you developed it and you did your little responsive mambo and it kind of worked on IE 11 does not mean it's going to work in a touch-friendly device. For public-facing, yes, this is going to be much more difficult. Get your hands on every device you possibly can and test your site. You're probably going to be surprised when something doesn't work when you thought it should. And if you can, try to test on different browsers on different sites. Chrome on iPhone, to me, has been problematic for a lot of responsive sites, not because of how we developed it, but rather because of two companies not playing fair. Okay, finally, and this is a biggie for me, is we should have been training our content authors anyhow, but with responsive design, this is even much more important. Primarily because things like imagery. Think about images, and you can add images to an HTML publishing field just fine, or a content editor web part, right? Pretty simple. The thing is, a lot of our content authors like to say, oh, well, I kind of want the image size changed. So they'll grab the corner and they'll resize it. You've now created a fixed image. You've broken fluid, flexible media. Yes, there are ways to override it, but wouldn't it have been nicer if you just taught your content author what to do in the first place? So my suggestion is highly train your content authors even more than you did before on how to design within the grid, the framework, and the master page and the page layouts you've given them. you're going to find it to be a lot easier. We're going to end with some resources here. My suggestion is either take a quick picture or better yet, just download this slide deck. It's probably going to be a lot easier for you. We start with a couple of those frameworks we talked about. Go download them tonight and go play with them. I think you'll have a good time with them. We also have our demo, the site that we just used. It's going to stay up for a long time, so go ahead and you can look at our code. We also have links to the frameworks, some popular frameworks that we recommend. These aren't necessarily SharePoint ready, but they shouldn't be that hard to convert. Particularly Bootstrap and Foundation, if you use responsive SharePoint, you'll get that. And also a link for off-campus navigation if you want to learn how to do that.
Then if you enjoyed this session and you want to learn more about responsive web design, you want to learn how to package, how to deploy in your own environment, there's a lot more content we have in our book. So go get it, and it is available on Amazon.
So with that, thank you. We appreciate your time. We hope it was good. Thank you. Thank you. We only have a few seconds here for questions, so probably just coming up if you have questions. I'd love to give away T-shirts, so please come on up, and we'd love to do what we can. Okay. And we'll get off this stage for you quickly. So thanks again, everyone. Have a good SharePoint conference.